Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Our election coverage continues, this time looking at the Assembly District covering Greater Superior.
My goal is to bring a focus-based solution to the 73rd District so that we can have someone that's working down in Madison to strengthen our community.
Plus, from the days he was drumming with pencils in math class, Zach Ross was all about music. Now, gone at 28, he's remembered by a longtime bandmate and friend. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
From the days he was drumming with pencils in math class, Zach Ross was all about music.
Forever, Zach will be an influence on me.
Now, gone at 28, he's remembered by a longtime bandmate and friend. But first, our election coverage continues, this time looking at the Assembly District covering Greater Superior.
My goal is to bring a focus-based solution to the 73rd District so that we can have someone that's working down in Madison to strengthen our community.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our coverage continues today with another candidate profile for the November election. This week, we've invited those vying for the open seat in the 73rd District that covers the Greater Superior area. The vacancy comes with the retirement of Democrat Nick Milroy from the seat he's held since 2009. On the Republican side is Angie Sapik of Lake Nabagamon, a produce broker working for her family's business, Dee's Marketing in Superior. Sapik declined our invitation last month to debate her primary opponent, Scott Lustery, and did not respond to a similar invitation for this show. The Democratic candidate is Laura Gapsky of Superior. She's a graduate of Superior High School and the University of Wisconsin-Superior and has been a member of that city's school board since 2017. She's long been active in combating domestic violence and sex trafficking and runs her own company providing expert witness, forensic interviewing, and consulting services for the legal system. And she joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Laura Gapsky.
Thanks so much for having me today.
So let's begin with your opening statement.
Yes. So why I am running is because I have spent, as you had mentioned, the last 20 years actually serving my community and listening to folks and advocating on their behalf on issues that matter the most to them. So my goal is to bring a focus-based solution to the 73rd District so that we can have someone that's working down in Madison to strengthen our community, improve our infrastructure, and protect our public lands. Through these years of work on nonprofits and school board, I really have understood better how to collaborate with folks, the importance of listening to these community members and our partners to work towards, as I mentioned, trying to find a solution. And I think as I'm door knocking, as I'm traveling throughout the 73rd district, I'm really hearing from the voters themselves, from the community members themselves, what they'd like to see happen. And as I mentioned, the skills that I've had and acquired by working through the legal system, understanding how legislation works and advocating personally on specific pieces of legislation, those skills are the experience that I believe are what the 73rd District needs to have a strong voice in Madison.
All right. Thank you, Laura Gapsky, for your opening statement. And now the questions. And I'm going to start with something we usually say for the end, which is, many, if not most, voters are frustrated by gridlock and political parties refusing to work with one another. What's a cause dear to your opponent's party that you'd be willing to embrace?
we are not where we want to be. And personally, it is not doing a service to our constituents, because what I've seen and heard from Nick Milroy in trying to prepare and upload information on how to best serve this district is that Republicans have not joined Democrats in supporting any of the governor's investments. And so we were fortunate, though, with the super or the majority right now, where Governor Evers can still have a veto power and some executive powers, he's been able to provide a budget that still serves our constituents. Some of the things that I think would be things that we agree upon would definitely be keeping our taxes low so that it's not a burden on our communities, on our smaller municipalities. But as I'm door knocking as well, I'm also hearing on the needs for infrastructure. And I believe, although I haven't studied much my opponent's stance on things, because I know what my values are and I know what I'm hearing from constituents, you know, I'm willing to listen to anyone. It doesn't matter your political affiliation or if you don't have a political affiliation. I want to work with everyone, and that's what I've demonstrated I can do for the past 20 years. The thousands of law enforcement, social workers, prosecutors that I've worked with all had differing opinions or values or you know, political stances. The victims and survivors and their families that I've worked with, you know, throughout my work also had diverse personal experiences or life values. None of that matters when you're working towards a common goal. And so I think that might be something that Angie and I both have in common, is wanting to do better for the 73rd district. And I applaud anyone that wants to do public service, because it is a thankless job. Although there are days that you know you're improving the livelihood or your community, and that's worth the sweat and the stress of really know that you're doing something for a higher, or a, you know, something more above just the individual. It's for community, and I've always been working for and serving community.
All right, to continue. Inflation continues to be a top-of-mind issue, both nationally and in Wisconsin. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation, and what specifically can the legislature do?
So what I've seen is that Joe Biden has passed some helpful, I guess, first steps when we see the impact of inflation on the economy. Some of the things that Governor Evers has done is taken their surplus within the state of Wisconsin to invest that in our neighbors, our businesses. During the pandemic and after that, Governor Evers has supported, just in Douglas County, 580 grants for small businesses. We know small businesses are really facing a challenging time with inflation. And so that's something that, you know, obviously I would support as your assemblywoman. Investment in infrastructure, you know, this is going to be creating prevailing wage jobs, union, well-paying jobs. So investment in green energy, investment in high-speed internet, that's going to be removing us from some of these oil-dependent industry jobs that are going to be outdated over time. And part of what the assembly needs to do, number one, is work together. And I am someone that, as I mentioned earlier, is willing to work with folks. I'm not going to have all the solutions, but I do expect that folks from both sides of the party will be collaborating on solutions or have to build relationships, which I believe I can do fairly well with folks, that we need to come up with a solution for our folks. I don't honestly have the most concrete plan to address that, because this is a new role for me. But I need to work with folks that have more experience, that have those ideas, work with the governor's office to find solutions that are going to support folks that are, you know, specifically being impacted by inflation. I know myself, I'm a single household income. And so the price of groceries is something that you're seeing steeply increase. So when I'm going and buying one bag of groceries or two bags of groceries, and it's over $100, that impacts my household deeply. And I think that lived experience of knowing how to survive and stretch a dollar paycheck to paycheck is something that I've seen growing up as a child living in low-income housing, and myself having to briefly live in low-income housing and working my way out of poverty. I understand that lived experience that folks are facing with this inflation right now. And so I'm going to work very hard to find solutions to resolve that as best as possible.
Thank you. Enbridge's Line 5 project promises to bring economic development to the area, including 700 jobs, but it's opposed by environmental groups and American Indian tribes who say any spill will irreparably harm the Lake Superior watershed and also impede treaty rights. How do you balance these competing concerns, or do you?
First and foremost, Robin, I absolutely 100% support tribal sovereignty. They absolutely should have the decisions on what they believe is best for their community. The fact is, throughout, you know, the state of Wisconsin, it's a much different situation than we face here in the 73rd district. Having Enbridge located right here, having the refinery located right here, I personally had to evacuate my home during the Husky refinery explosion because I was within that, you know, 3-mile radius, and I was less than that actually. And so what first and foremost we need to be doing when I think about the unique balancing act of our community is that safety needs to come first. We must hold all corporations in our communities to the highest safety standards, to the highest prevailing wage standards, and safe working environments for the folks that are doing these dangerous jobs. And so while I was mentioning holding corporations accountable, such as the information they had prior to the explosion, that's just unacceptable. We cannot allow corporations with past red flags to continue to do harm to our community and put our community at risk. But the fact is that Enbridge and the Line 5 project does contribute a lot to our community. And for that, I am deeply grateful. I drive past the refinery almost on a daily basis. I drive by the headquarters offices of Enbridge on a daily basis. And I've had friends and family members that have worked for these corporations and provided a living wage job. That's important. It's providing a lot to our community, particularly in Superior, where I reside and have lived here since I was 5 years old. And so this is a difficult decision. And I am mostly proud, knowing that this is the reality of the current situation, that a lot of folks are moving towards green energy, that our community is also moving towards clean energy. I know particularly one of the trades corporations or unions rather has just recently gone through electric vehicle training for putting in charging stations, which we don't have any public charging stations currently in Superior. And so I am proud of the work of the unions, understanding this is the reality of right now. I have a hard time saying I 100% support it, but again, that's the reality. I drive a gas vehicle every day, and I realize the benefits that this Line 5 is going to bring to our community. And so I guess that's kind of a complicated subject, but I just really understand I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that our district never has to face a very scary situation like we did the time we had to evacuate our home.
Thank you. And the final question. With its reversal of Roe versus Wade, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the states. Where do you envision the Wisconsin legislature taking the state in light of the recent decision, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal?
I am very proud and honored that I've been endorsed by Planned Parenthood, not only for abortion access or reproductive health care, as we should be calling it, but for all the services that they provide throughout the state of Wisconsin. the fact that Republicans support, including Ron Johnson, this extreme 1849 abortion ban that criminalizes it in all situations is absolutely appalling. And I hope that we see a response at the polls, because up on the docket is also looking at contraception. And so we understand that women particularly, or birthing humans, should have a right to decide when and how they're going to bring in or bring in a pregnancy or have bring in a child to their lives, which is a beautiful thing. And so I would look forward to passing something that is going to repeal that abortion ban. The fact is that abortions are going to happen. It's just going to happen, you know, with a burden on the folks that probably are more traditionally disadvantaged and don't have the resources to travel to other states, putting them at further risk of, again, preventing something that had happened. You know, the fact is that forcing people to carry a child to term is against, you know, their body autonomy, right? And the thing is that if we believe in body autonomy, this is going to include, and needs to include, from the Republican side as well, supporting folks when they decide to make the decision for their family to have an abortion. It is general health care. Working in the child abuse field, I have seen children that have become pregnant through these unfortunate circumstances. So to not even allow an exception that is clearly in that child's best interest the majority of the time is not something that I would ever feel comfortable leaving alone. I will fight as hard as I can to repeal this outdated criminalization of abortion that was passed when women could not even vote.
Thank you. And that concludes the questions. We've been speaking with Laura Gapsky of Superior. She's a Democrat on the ballot this November for the open seat for the 73rd District in the Wisconsin Assembly. Thank you for joining us, Laura Gapsky.
Thank you, Robin. Have a great day.
Coming up, remembering a young musician taken too soon. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Shane Nelson of Superior is one of, can I say, among our favorite guests on the show. He's been playing the guitar since age 6 and won I don't know how many songwriting contests, including that of Duluth Dylan Fest, but he hasn't done it alone. In addition to his solo act, he plays with a group, Crescent Moon, and since high school and before, with drummer Zach Ross. Sadly, Shane and the rest of us lost Zach less than a month ago at the age of 28 in a single car accident in the town of City Point, Wisconsin, when he was on his way to a concert. Shane joins us today to remember his friend and bandmate, and thank you for joining us, Shane, and our condolences to you and Zach's family.
Thanks, Robin. It's definitely been a hard time, one that I can't really even put to words.
You describe him in one of the obituaries as always playing the drums or keeping a beat. I think you said in math class, I'm picturing it with pencils or something like that.
Yeah, that's my earliest memory of Zach is when I met him in one of our split classes, because he was a year younger than me. Mm-hmm. I think I was a sophomore and he was a freshman. And I was in a split math class, and it was like a math test or something or another we were doing, and I was looking for other people to perform and play with. And well, there was Zach. He was not at all doing like the math assignment or test that we were supposed to be doing. And he was like air drumming with pencil. Just imagine like a kid with like some graphic, you know, sweatshirt, you know, and long hair down and over his face. And he just had like these pencils and maybe some headphones on.
Wait a minute, headphones in class?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think you were able to listen to music during tests or something like that, you know, so that you could, like, concentrate.
So did he pass?
No, he didn't, okay. Of course. No, of course not. But I knew right then and there that he was the guy that I wanted to be playing music with. I mean, like, once I heard him, you know, on an actual drum set when I went over to his house, because he was, like, different. This is the thing about Zach. It's like, you know, when you listen to traditionally people playing music, let's just say in one form or another, whether it's a guitar, drums or something, you know, you hear people like playing popular music or like they do things traditionally that maybe like people would do. But no, like Zach, he listened to completely different music than probably any popular music that you would listen to. And I think that's the reason why Zach's performance with me was so unique, mm-hmm. because,
well, as you point out that, you know, he was listening to different sort of stuff. You've told me before that you had a little more traditional influences early on, Buddy Holly, the Beatles, correct?
Well, maybe traditional for someone that grew up in that time period, but like I was 10 years old and the year was like 2001.
Well, that's true. Okay, traditional for me. I'm a few generations up on you there.
And that's just the thing. It's just like, I don't know why or what caught my attention to the older music. I don't know if it's because I found value in it, maybe. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was younger and I had a Beatles CD and there was a little girl in this trailer park that I lived in, you know, and she had like a boombox CD player or something like that. And they were listening to like Britney Spears, you know, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys. And like, that was like the generation of popular music that people were listening to. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2001. And here I am, you know, with Beatles CDs.
And then you're saying that Zach was off on a different planet.
Oh, yeah. You know, he brought these elements into these songs that we would perform. You know, like if you listen to like some of these videos and these recordings on like Facebook or YouTube, you know, of us performing like a traditional cover song or something like that, you know, like they wouldn't be typical, like mm-hmm. his playing in these songs. And especially in like the original music that we did, because that's what we were most passionate about. He would bring these elements of these songs, you know, that he would listen to in these other genres, like Japanese speed metal and just interesting influences, mm-hmm. that and I mean it I think it just created for a real unique experience.
I have to say I'm not familiar with Japanese speed metal. You've intrigued me. Can you think of an example that shows that?
Well, I was actually just looking at one of these last texts. One of the last videos that he gave me to listen to was some Japanese rock artist. This link that he sent me, he's like, oh, listen to this. This is really good. And he was interested in a lot of like anime, like a lot of different, like, you know, Japanese created works, like Hayao Miyazaki, who did a lot of different anime movies and things like that. But this is where he would get some of his music from.
You mean from the music, the soundtracks to the anime movies?
Exactly. And I don't know where exactly he would find these things. The thing that's amazing to me is somebody like Zach has not listened to any music like the Beatles. He couldn't tell you five Beatles songs. He couldn't tell you three of them. But he played them mm-hmm. every weekend. And that's the thing that just like drives me crazy is he performs these songs more than probably anybody has even listened to them. But he's never heard the original versions of them in his life. And that's the thing that's just insane about it is like he's performing these songs, doesn't know how they go, but somehow he brings in these elements of these other musics like these, like this Japanese rock and roll or just, you know, some Drumeo. I think it's a magazine that had like a YouTube channel with featured drum artists on there. This is where he got his influences from and not from popular music like we would do mm-hmm. when we would go out and perform.
We're speaking with singer-songwriter Shane Nelson of Superior. We're remembering his friend and longtime collaborator in their band Crescent Moon, Zach Ross, who died in a single car accident on July 29th. So how about, I was going to ask for a favorite song of his, but let's hold that for a second. How about one of your covers, because of what you were just saying, you know, maybe something that he never had heard, you know, the original on.
Well, one in particular that we played very consistently was Sultans of Swing.
Okay.
And that was a Dire Straits song.
All right. Let's hear a portion of Dire Straits' Sultans of Swing, performed by Crescent Moon, with Zach Ross on drums.
Get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park. Meantime, south of the river, stopping you hold everything.
We're speaking with Shane Nelson. We're remembering his longtime friend and collaborator, Zach Ross. So how about one of yours, an original song, one that might have been a favorite of his?
Well, you know, there was different songs for different time periods in our playing, you know, just in the 12 years that we performed. But one of the songs that Zach had always like held on to and loved was Keep It Moving. It was one of our songs that we started performing when we won the Battle of the Bands at the Deck, and that was in 2010-ish.
Okay, well, we'll go with Keep It Moving by Crescent Moon, featuring Zach Ross on drums.
Proud of what you do, and give it to me like I'm the one.
And that was Keep It Movin' by Crescent Moon, featuring Zach Ross on drums. We're paying tribute to Zach, who we lost in a car accident on July 29th. We're speaking with Shane Nelson of Superior, his bandmate. How might your work be affected by his loss? You know, I don't know if you've had a moment to create anything yet, but just in general.
Well, I will say that as far as the creative process goes, I mean, it's medicine, you know, the music is. And another really close songwriter friend of mine, Scarlett Woods from Brainerd, and I'm really grateful to have her in my life and talk to, you know, because she, like she said, don't stop creating. Mm-hmm. And I haven't. And there's been a lot of reflecting, you know, in the music that I've been writing with Zach and thinking of him. And even playing some of the songs that we used to play have new meaning, or have the meanings changed, or like it feels different to play. You know, besides the music, he had some other great successes in his life that he was really proud of. And one of them being, you know, a house that he was able to get a mortgage for. And he moved with his mom to be closer to his brother in this Nakusa was the name of the town, and it's near Wisconsin Rapids. Mm-hmm. He moved down there, and every weekend he was driving up here to perform. Like, I mean, we're talking 3 hours and 56 minutes, 4 hours away. And he was driving that like every weekend to like come play for a couple $100. And it's just like, he's spending more money in gas than he is, you know, making money just to play music. And I mean, after all said and done, and, you know, we went down to go see his mom, I couldn't believe the amount of dedication this guy had to come and travel that far. Because, I mean, that is a long ways. Mm-hmm. There's people out there that would try to reason and say, okay, well, you know what? If I'm going to move this far away, I'm going to have to get more money, or I'm going to need more money in gas if we're going to make this work. And there was none of that with Zach. He came intrinsically motivated to come and play these shows so that he could just be a part of the music. And he never laid it on me or anybody else that it was too far of a drive or this or that. No, he would do it. And the thing about Zach is he would push himself so hard because he was working a job down there full time as well. And I mean, and that's the thing that's also so hard about this whole thing is I've never met anybody in my life that was so dedicated to the songs that I wrote and the songs that we worked on together as him, as much as him. I don't know if I've ever or ever will ever again. And also, you know, with the love of his mom and his two dogs that he had. And that was the other thing. Zach was like the dog whisperer. We would go out, me and some buddies, and we want to take Zach along with. Hey, Zach, you want to come out and go to a movie? You want to go to the casino? You want to go out and have a couple of drinks? Nope, sorry, I'm hanging out with the boys. Because that was his thing. The boys were his dogs. He doesn't even have human interactions. Like, Zach, this is what I'm saying. Zach was a kind of a quieter person, but he spoke mm-hmm. on the drum. That's when he spoke, was musically.
How do you think he'd like to be remembered? Or what would he say, don't ever do in my memory?
I don't think he'd want people to be crying and be upset. I mean, obviously that would be something that would be hard, especially in a situation like this, not to do.
Right.
But I think he'd want to be remembered for the music and the love that he had for dogs. And
how about one more song to take us out? Something maybe he would have laughed about, or
it was actually the last song that we performed together. It was over at the Blueberry Festival in Iron River. There's this song that I wrote in high school, and he would always set up his drums in a specific way just to perform this one song. It's called I Like You. It's a song that's on the 2020 album that I had, but he didn't perform on that. But we went in and recorded that song, a version of that song, the way that he played it.
And we will hear that. We've been speaking with Shane Nelson of Superior. We're remembering his longtime friend and collaborator, Zach Ross, who died in a single car accident on July 29th. Thank you for joining us and sharing the memories, Shane.
Forever, Zach will be an influence on me, and hopefully for any other artist that listens to him. He was a special one.
There have been times before that I've been lost in all the world's realities. There's something different here, there's something in the air, 'cause every time I see your face, there's nothing changing on any time on any given day. What I'm saying is, I like you, need you, and I want you. It's all you and all you do. Oh, come and tell me, girl, that you feel it too. Times before that I've been down, and this whole world's been up on me. There's something different here, I've got a feeling that won't let go, 'cause every time I see your face, there's nothing changing on any time on any given day. What I'm saying is, I like you, need you, and I want you. It's all you and all you do. Oh, come and tell me, girl, won't you come along and just say, I like you, need you, and I want you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, we mentioned the Enbridge Line 5 project in our candidate interview. There's a new development on it?
Yes, there is. On Wednesday, a federal judge ruled that Canadian energy firm Enbridge trespassed on the Bad River Tribe's lands and profited at the tribe's expense. But the judge stopped short of shutting down the oil and gas pipeline across the Bad River Reservation. U.S. District Judge William Conley ruled Wednesday that Enbridge was unjustly enriched by continued operation of the Line 5 pipeline on the Bad River Reservation, and that the tribe was entitled to monetary payments based on the company's profit. Even so, the judge ruled that the tribe was not entitled to an immediate shutdown of the pipeline as it had asked for, saying that it would have significant public and foreign policy implications. Instead, the judge is suggesting that Enbridge be required to complete its proposed Line 5 reroute outside the tribe's reservation within 5 years. And the court would also require the company to pay the tribe a fee for pipeline easements that expired, which prompted the lawsuit filed by the Bad River Band back in 2019. In response to the tribe's lawsuit, Enbridge has proposed a $450 million plan to build a new line outside of the reservation. Today, the judge will hold a conference with the parties involved to determine whether the Line 5 reroute can be built within 5 years or less, as well as appropriate compensation for the tribe. And Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins said that the ruling made clear that Enbridge is not above the law. He called it a positive step for protecting the tribe's water resources and their members. However, he noted that building the pipeline within the Bad River watershed would still have impacts on the tribe. So the tribe is now consulting with the attorneys on the case and also the tribal council on next steps. And in a statement, Enbridge has said that the ruling upholds the importance of Line 5 and also recognizes that the relocation project needs to move forward in a timely fashion. Enbridge has maintained that the pipeline is safely operated and has been for roughly the last 70 years, and that it serves as a vital energy link for the region.
All right. Well, out on the harbor, there's a new ship in port with the emphasis being on new.
That's right. The newest U.S. flagged freighter on the Great Lakes glided into the Twin Ports this week. The Mark W. Barker is the first such vessel built on the lakes in almost 40 years. It's owned by Ohio-based Interlake Steamship Company and named after its president with the same name. It was built in Sturgeon Bay, and it left there in late July, and it was christened just last week in Cleveland, Ohio. It's part of a partnership with Interlake Steamship Company and Cargill Incorporated to move salt from the Great Lakes region. But this ship that's been built is one of the more modern ships in the fleet. It will be a little bit smaller than the 1,000-foot freighters that are operating on the Great Lakes. It's about 639 feet in length and 78 feet wide. And it also has a different design. It has a rectangular cargo hold as compared to the V-shaped holds of other ships that are designed for bulk cargoes like iron ore and limestone or coal that can be poured into a hold. This is designed so that it could carry oversized items like wind turbine components that would be removed by cranes. And so it allows it to handle more diverse cargoes on the lake. And it also meets the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's most stringent emission standards for diesel engines on the lakes. It was also built from steel manufactured in Indiana that was sourced from the Minnesota's Iron Range. And so it entered the Duluth Superior Harbor on Tuesday with salt that was unloaded in Superior, and it's headed for Cleveland now with a load of iron ore.
Well, we're all boat watchers around here, so this will give us a new one and some new characteristics to identify. Rick, on the Minnesota side, the threatened nurses' strike is getting closer.
Yes, it is. Essentia Health announced Wednesday morning that it has filed another unfair labor practice charge with the National Labor Relations Board against the Minnesota Nurses Association's planned strike, this time for failing to include Essentia Health Duluth in its 10-day strike notice list. The list of 16 hospitals that were given notice about the pending strike included Essentia Health St. Mary's Medical Center, but did not include Essentia Health Duluth. Because of this, Miller Dwan nurses are still expected to show up for work during the strike, Essentia says. Essentia also said in a news release that this is another oversight from the MNA and its rush to a work stoppage. While we respect the MNA's right to call a legal strike, they have not followed the regulatory process in this case. These laws are in place to hold both sides accountable, and Essentia will continue to follow the process as defined in statute, and we expect the MNA to do the same. Now, MNA's first vice president, Chris Rubish, who is a registered nurse at Essentia, said that charge is yet another desperate move and an attempt to stop up to 15,000 nurses from walking out next week. The MNA strike is planned for 7 a.m. September 12th. to 7 a.m. September 15 in the Twin Ports, Moose Lake, and Twin Cities area. All healthcare systems expected to be impacted by the strike filed unfair labor relations charges on Thursday, September 1, for failing to notify federal and state mediation services as required by the National Labor Relations Act. Rubish counters that the National Labor Relations Board requires notification only of the date and time that picketing will commence, which the Minnesota Nurses Association provided to Essentia Health. This is no requirement that a union provide notice of the locations at which it intends to picket, Rubish says. He also said that negotiating team hopes to meet with hospital executives to work toward settling contracts.
Okay. Back in Superior, the equinox hasn't quite hit and summer is not officially over, and neither is the celebration.
People that missed out on the Superior fireworks on the 4th of July had to wait until Labor Day to see them explode in the sky. But after bad weather forced the postponement of the show on July 4, the city moved it to Monday, September 5. The weather was much more cooperative on Labor Day, with the exception of a low line cloud hovering right over Barker's Island. However, the low cloud did give off kind of a neat effect to some of the fireworks that stayed mid to lower height. And judging by the oohs and ahs of the crowd who were on hand to watch, they didn't mind seeing a slightly different light show on Labor Day evening.
Okay. And finally, at the University of Minnesota Duluth, an old canine friend got a makeover, but he's going back to his classic look.
Yes. Well, Robin, change can be difficult. And in the case of the University of Minnesota Duluth's attempts to update the look of its mascot, Champ, it can be downright rough. Succumbing to public pressure following the debut of the new yellow Champ mascot costume last week, UMD announced Tuesday the previous iteration of its gray bulldog mascot costume will return for the 2022-23 school year. UMD said in a news release that we have heard from our students, alumni, fans, and supporters over the last few days and appreciate all of the passion for and loyalty to Champ. The previous UMD Champ costume will return for the current school year. Now, UMD showed off its new yellow growling Champ costume on social media on the afternoon of Thursday, September 1st, just before unleashing the new Champ that night before a crowd of 3,500 fans at Mulaski Stadium prior to the Bulldogs football game. However, critics on social media had already displayed their disgust, comparing the new Champ costume to Winnie the Pooh in some cases. An online petition called for the return of the previous Champ costume, and whiteboards on campus included slogans such as hashtag justice for Champ. So after only a handful of days, UMD has rolled over and sent new Champ back to the doghouse and unleashed old Champ for one more season.
Okay, we'll be happy to see him. And we've been speaking with Rick Lovers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Crescent Moon featuring the late Zach Ross. Stay safe, everyone.
Thank you.